You're listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast from New York City. I'm Sebastian Canelli. So the deal is I was the guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host. And my guest today is Morgan Miller, who improv fans might know from Detroit, her Lloyd team, Smalls, her old Harold team, and now Mermaids, her current Harold team. She's also a stand-up, and she's fucking awesome as shit. Morgan, what's going on?
Nothing, Sebastian. I'm so happy that you're the host, you know? I really couldn't have asked for a more, qualified host.
I know. I'm really good. I'm a good question asker.
You're one of the best in the community, I'd say.
Thank you.
The long-form improv community.
Yes, the podcast community at large. Awesome. So, Morgan, we can't fuck around. We can't fool around too much. We have to make sure we focus. So, you're from Denver, right?
From Denver originally. Yes. Started doing improv not in Denver. Started doing it in North Carolina.
At college?
At college.
Cool. But when you were growing up, you were like a very athletic kind of person, right?
Athletic kind of person, sure. Yeah. I was a major athlete.
All right, Morgan, we're not going to nitpick my kindness.
Just saying.
You were very athletic, I should say.
2007 Colorado Athlete of the Year.
Were you?
Indeed.
Holy. You were the Colorado Athlete of the Year.
Yes.
And that was, how do you become that?
The Denver Post, like, main newspaper there. Uh-huh. They have, like, 10 finalists, and then you go to this, like, gala, and then they decide, based on, like, grade point average and the number of sports you play and how good you are at all of them, who's the best. And I was the best female, and then there was a guy who won, too. It was crazy.
That is a huge accomplishment.
I have a big trophy, and whenever I tell comedians, they're like, we don't care.
Well, fuck them, you know? Just because they were all a bunch of nerds before this, yeah. You know? That's awesome. So what sports did you play?
I played in high school. I played basketball, lacrosse, field hockey, and soccer. So I was a four-speed sport athlete. I was All-American in three of them.
What does that mean, All-American?
It means you're on an All-American team, so you're best of the best. And then I was, like, recruited by a ton of schools to go play for them and for money. And I was like, this is insane.
Yeah.
I was choosing between Stanford, Princeton, and Duke and decided to go to Duke because it was just, like, the best fit academically, socially, and lacrosse-wise. I went to Duke, played on scholarship, was, like, rad.
Yeah, and that's, like, a huge lacrosse school.
Yeah, top four.
Yeah.
We made it to the Final Four 2 years I was there.
And so you were on TV for that?
Yeah, you're on TV.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I didn't play a lot in college. Definitely was, like, a very humbling experience.
So would you get into games or would you, like, completely sit out the whole games?
Depend.
I don't know, lacrosse.
Yeah, depends. I would get in sometimes at the very end.
Uh-huh.
And it's, like, 15 degrees out or something, and I haven't warmed up or anything. Ugh. And I'd be like, throw you in for the last, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah,
it wasn't the best experience, but...
So what? I guess that, like, it kind of helped you in a way.
It was a ground for my comedy, honestly. Like,
What do you mean?
Having a team is like having an audience all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it was like... And I was always the, like, comedic relief because it was so serious. D1 is so serious.
I can't even imagine.
I mean, people are hardcore.
People are crying after games and stuff like that.
Totally. Crying after games, like, before games, like, listening to their iPods and, like, super fucking focused and, like, tying their shoes in a certain way because that's, like, how they, like, can get amped for the game. And lots of nerves. Like, totally. People are nervous, like, so nervous before games. So
the energy is just like crazy.
It's crazy. And I just didn't take it that seriously. Like, I know. I just was like, this is insane. It's women's lacrosse. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to, like, be professional athletes. So I think that's why my coach didn't, like, love me the most. I didn't take it super seriously. So I was always joking around, always trying to be funny. Yeah. Like, on bus trips, I would take the microphone in the front of the bus and, like, do sets just so, like, I could help people laugh and, like, not be in their heads.
That's so fun.
Yeah, so fun. Like, before a major game before, like, we played UVA, who was one of our major rivals. There was, like, crazy tension in the air. And so I was like, I got to break this tension. It's got to be funny and light and loose. So I told my friend, I was like, just flicker the lights when I come in. And I went outside and I got completely naked. And I just did what I called a naked run, which was just her flicking the lights and me running naked in the locker room. And it was so a lot of tits bouncing up and down, a lot of nudity. And everyone was laughing and it was so funny. And so I definitely think I brought like a lightness to that intensity.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I honestly cannot imagine you being like super serious and like I need this win before the games. And it's awesome how like you saw that tense moment and how you like combat that is with your humor.
Right. Yeah, totally. And I always did that, but I was more serious about sports in high school for sure. Uh-huh. I used to like cry after games and
really?
My parents would drive me home and like I wouldn't talk to them. Like I was nuts about sports.
Sure.
But then I just, you know, I kind of got to college and saw how important this was to everyone and I just couldn't get on board with that.
Yeah.
And I always loved humor and theater and you know, humor to me was so much bigger than anything that else that I did. It was like the ability to make people laugh is a really special gift.
Of course.
So I like hounded on that.
You must have been the most fun as a teenager and a kid. I mean, you're so fun now, but like I could imagine you like I feel like you are mischievous and like you could definitely misbehave in those situations in like the best way and not be scared of like the repercussions.
Definitely. I was such a little like deviant. my basement's full of like street signs because we used to go out and steal street signs as kids.
Oh.
And I was always doing characters at school. I got kicked out of class a lot for like being funny.
But that's awesome.
But that's part of it. You know, I was really good at academics, so I never had to work that hard at them. So it was like in class, I wanted to just be funny and silly. I was like a class clown for sure growing up.
Yeah.
There was a time when a teacher physically pulled my entire desk out into the hall because I was so disruptive in class and like made me sit in the hall at the desk for like the entire class.
Would you get upset after that or did you feel like?
I mean, sort of. I always wanted to be really good for my parents.
Yeah.
So I wasn't like proud to get kicked out of class, but I definitely wasn't like toning it down.
Yeah.
When I should have been. But
the laugh was worth it.
The laugh
punishment.
Was always worth it, as it still is today.
Of course. Are you kidding me? So were you doing improv or stand-up in college when you were playing?
So not really. I tried out for the improv team my freshman year and did really well. And they were like, you're awesome. We love you, but you can't do lacrosse and improv. There's just too much of a time commitment in lacrosse. And they were right. I was really pissed. I was like, this is ridiculous. I could do both. But they were right. I just couldn't have committed to both because they had shows every weekend and I was traveling every weekend for lacrosse.
Oh, wow.
So I quit after my junior year, and then I auditioned again as a senior. And they never took a senior ever before me in all the years they've had it.
Whoa.
So I went.
Fuck yeah. That's awesome, Mark.
Yeah. So I went and I auditioned as a senior, and they accepted me.
Uh-huh.
And they also hadn't taken women, really, in the past years. So
really?
I was one of the first women they took. They took two other women that year, but one of the women left. But yeah, so it was like a big deal for them to take a senior and a woman.
Yeah.
But I had never really done improv before that, but I just knew I was like funny. And they did short form. I did short form in college, which I loved. I loved short form, and I still do love it. I think a lot of long form improvisers hate on it, but I love it. I think it's a really great art form. I think it's like does its job, which is to make audiences laugh, and audiences love it.
They go nuts for that.
Nuts.
And you know what the thing about, I think long form improvisers like look down on it, but I think for short form, you kind of have to be in a way funnier.
Yeah.
which it might be a very like controversial statement, but like in long form, you could rely on acting and stuff like that to get laughs. But short form is like, oh, you just have to kind of say jokes.
Totally. I agree completely. Yeah, it's like one-offing, you know? It's like immediate laughter you need because you're about to change what's going to happen in the scene in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And with long form, it's like building and creating. I think they're both difficult in their own ways.
Of course. Of course. I was giving short form a little boost, you know?
It needs it. I love short form. It does need it.
It
needs
it.
People hate on it.
Oh, so bad.
They're just like, it's stupid and ridiculous. No one acts, all this stuff. I think it's so great. I wish I could do more. There's, like, none in the city, though.
I did a show, like, a week or so ago.
Did you do short form?
Yeah, for, like, an event for some people. And that's probably my full... I have enough now for at least a year or two. After an hour short form for like, a bunch of people that hate comedy.
Yeah
that's, that's about enough for a while.
Yeah, that's a good amount.
Yeah.
So I auditioned... And did short form in my audition, which was really fun and just, like, it felt easy to me because that's what I'd been doing. I just was doing short form in front of my team. I was, like, making quick jokes and doing silly stuff, very physical, a lot of physical humor, which, like, freeze is, like, the main short form game where you, like, freeze someone's position and then make your own silliness out of it. So I did short form in college. We actually never did long form. So my first long-form experience was my first UCB class in New York City.
And you moved right after college?
Right after college.
For UCB?
For comedy.
For comedy.
I came for stand-up.
Cool.
And decided to take classes in improv on the side. But I was really intensely doing stand-up. I was doing like 15 sets a week. Just open mic. And doing improv on the side. And then sort of like blew through the improv classes. Like I just was like on top of it. I did a... intensive, and in a year I was through all the classes and ready to audition.
Wow.
So I auditioned, did not get on.
That's okay.
Which is fine. devastated. I was devastated.
Of course.
But I didn't get on, and then 2 months later, Nate Dern called me and said they had an opening and asked me to come on.
I remember when you got on.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I cried. Yeah. The phone called. I cried with Nate Dern. I still have the message on my phone.
That's funny. That's so funny that you... Of course you save it, though.
Of course.
It means so much.
So much.
Where were you when you got the call?
I was at home in my room. Well, I was at home, and I think the call came, and I didn't know who it was from, so I let it go to voicemail.
And it was a Denver number.
It was a Denver number.
So you were like, oh, it's probably someone from home or some shit.
Right.
Yeah.
And also it was in the middle of auditions, like between auditions. So I was like, there's no way this is anything to do with improv. And then I like listened to the call and called Nate Dern Rack immediately, cried, called my mom, called my brother, cried to them. My mom cried.
Oh.
It was a whole thing. It was the most one of the most exciting things that's ever happened to me in comedy was getting on a UCB team because I wanted it so badly.
Yeah.
And I was such a fan of Harold Knight. I came almost every week. Grandma's Ashes was on Harold Knight at that time. And I was just such a fan of them. I thought they were brilliant.
What like do you think drew you to Grandma's Ashes?
I think they're like lightheartedness and silliness.
Yeah.
Was so amazing to me. And I never gravitated towards the teams that were, like, put on, like, great shows where, like, at the end there was a culmination of, like, brilliance. Like, I appreciated that.
Yeah.
I think I really appreciated more was, like, lightheartedness and silliness and, like, Abra coming on and, like, being an insane character and everyone, like, loving that and boosting that energy.
And that's so you.
So me.
That's so – it makes total sense because you're all about, like, being playful and stuff like that in your scene work. So
totally.
In, like, the best way. So, it, like – I totally see why you love them so much.
Loved Grandma's Ashes. Was also, like, huge Nicole Byer fan, huge Alison Rich fan. Like, those are my favorite comedians.
Really?
On stage at Harold Knight. Oh, yeah. I was like, Nicole Byer is everything, you know? Because she comes on with just these huge-ass characters. It's like, girl, fuck you! And I'm just like, yes! Like, and I just felt like they were having the most fun on stage. That was what was... Because for me, improv at the end of the day is about having fun and bringing the audience in on that fun.
Cool. Is stand-up that for you?
Yeah, definitely. I'm really different than most New York stand-ups.
Yeah, yeah.
New York is all about like truth saying. They're like, be truthful, be honest, like mm-hmm. open up yourself to the world.
Of course, the Marc Maron's yes. and wannabes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I was, for a little bit, I was closeted homosexual for a while. So I was like, how do I do this if I'm closeted? Like, how do I tell my truth?
And, oh, continue. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
I was going to say, how long into your comedy did you come out?
A year and a half I was doing comedy and then I came out.
And do you think doing comedy helped that? You come out? Or, I mean...
Totally. It definitely helped me come out, and it definitely, in, like, both a comfortable and uncomfortable way. I think that there's way more lesbians now, but there weren't really that many coming up. But it just was... I also did a lot of stand-up, and I used to go to open mics and talk about, like, boyfriends and things like that. And after, there was one comedian who was pretty terrible who would come up and be like, you're gay. You're super gay. Like, what are you talking about? Ugh. And I would, like, call my mom and be so upset about it. But it was, like, those little pushes where I was like, I hate hiding behind this mask of, like, being straight. And so it definitely helped. And the improv community was so supportive and wonderful with it. And it definitely shaped my voice in a really positive way when I came out.
Yeah.
It was the best thing I could have done for my comedy.
Sure, because in a way, I don't want to speak for you, but you're, like, being more honest.
Totally.
And, like, so you're more open with the audience. I think audiences see that instantly.
Totally.
Even if it is, like, you're hiding a small thing from them. Like,
right.
Not, like, a major thing like you. I think as soon as, like, you're like, I'm just trying to bear who I am and show you who I am, they, like, connect to that. So I'm sure that helps so much.
Oh, my gosh. Immensely. I mean, it just... I am such a different comedian than I was coming out for so many reasons. But one was, like, coming out and just being honest on stage. And I think I've, like... just grown into my own, my, like, style. I'm, like, really more comfortable playing. I've always been more comfortable playing men on stage.
Uh-huh.
Just, like, what I gravitate to.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I'm more, like, excited after someone's, like, oh, my God, you're so wonderful. Like, are you, like, what's your deal? It's just, like, I'm a gay comedian, and I, like, love that. I, like, I'm obsessed with that. And I think I'm a good advocate for, like, gay people in the community, and it's just, like, helped other people come out, and so it's just been, that's been, like, a wonderful experience for me.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm happy that you had that.
Me too. Yeah, it would suck if I was still closeted. That would be the worst.
Yeah, yeah, and it's nice that you felt safe here.
Yeah, I felt really safe here.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So back to classes. So, was there any, like, classes that really pop out to you?
Yeah, 401 was, like, the class that stands out to me the most.
Will Hines, right?
Will Hines.
I know too much about you.
You know so much about me. Will Hines is everything to me. He's the reason I'm the improviser I am today, I think. He was so supportive of me and just, like, sort of got me as an improviser. He knew mm-hmm. I wasn't going to be technically the best improviser ever, and I don't think I ever will be. But he knew that I was really joyous and passionate about the art form.
Yeah.
And so he saw that, and he, like, incubated it in a really sweet way. He said one thing that always stuck with me, which is, like, I'm going to teach you everything I know about improv. I'm going to teach you how to do it and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, funny is funny.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that just sunk with me so hard. I was like, oh, thank God. You know, because he was like, I can be funny. I don't know if I get this game stuff. Uh-huh. I don't know if I can, like, create a Herald, but I know I can be funny. So that, like, really helped. And then in 401, I met everyone that I was on my first indie team with. And Mike Kelton, who's a wonderful improviser and
love
man.
Love Mike.
He created Pulley, which was my first indie team. And we... were really great in the indie scene, and that was my first, like, hardcore indie team. And I was on Pulley for, like, a year, and then I got on my first Herald team and kind of had to back out of the indie scene because I wanted to keep doing stand-up. That was really important to me.
Of course.
So I couldn't put everything into improv, which I think a lot of comedians do, but I just knew that stand-up was still really important to me, and I always sort of did it. But then when I got on Touring Company... I couldn't do as much stand-up as I wanted to. But lately, just got off Touring Company, and now I'm back doing stand-up. I just did my half hour, which was really cool. But both improv and stand-up go hand in hand and have, like, helped one another immensely.
How so?
Like, I just think the amount of performing I did in improv has put me in a place to be more comfortable on stage. And also, like, I'm really good at handling hecklers and, like, riffing.
Of course.
And so I'm good at hosting shows, which has been great. But it's just, like, so helpful to, like, and it helps with my joke writing. Like, knowing game and, like, setup and punch and heightening, all those things that I didn't know before I learned in improv. So that's helped immensely. And then I think just, like, being comfortable alone on stage and doing stand-up is a really big confidence booster and has helped my improv immensely as well. So they both – it boggles my mind that more people don't do both.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's really crazy to me.
Because there is, like, a divide between the two.
Totally. Improv is so much more supportive and wonderful. And stand-up is really sad and, like, lonely.
Yeah.
So I get it. Mm-hmm. But they're both just so afraid of one another at the end of the day. I mean, stand-up talks so much shit about improvisers, and I think it's ridiculous. But they're just scared to, like, not know what they say next.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if everyone did more of both, it would just help both communities.
Or not even just had respect for the other person. Like, you don't have to do what I do, or I don't have to do what you do. But, like, be like, oh, you're putting yourself out there, so am I. Cool.
Right. If we're all at the end of the day trying to make people laugh. Like, mm-hmm. why are we hating on one another?
That sucks.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So I remember Pulley. That was, like, such a fun team. I remember, like, doing indie shows and you were doing it. That was awesome. What was, like, nice about, like, did you guys perform a lot? I know I saw you guys do a bunch of shows, but, like, what was great about, like, starting doing that?
Yeah, we performed a ton. We had a monthly show at Under St. Mark's
mm-hmm.
that we did, and we practiced 3 hours a week every week. So it was a big commitment. It was like a Herald team.
Yeah. And this, did you go into it being like, we want it to be like a house team? Like, we're, like, practicing as much as a house team. We want to be, like, getting ready for that.
Right? Yes, definitely. Everyone was UCB focused. Uh-huh. And once they said you could audition as a team, Bully got on board with that. And we started doing – our practices were, like, tailored towards UCB game and Herald and that kind of stuff. And we did Heralds, I think, at Under St. Mark's. So we were definitely training to be on teams.
Which is amazing because a lot of indie teams don't do Heralds.
Yeah, not at all.
Yeah.
Because a lot of time you only get 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So they are all really focused on montages and just off a suggestion. I force most of my teams to do openings, even if it's 12 minutes.
It's so weird because, like, all the whole indie scene, like, no one does openings. And then all house teams do openings.
Right, exactly. And I think it's so – I think that's okay. I don't know if you feel the same way, but openings are funny. They can be mm-hmm. really funny and interesting to watch.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, it's just a throwaway. But it's so helpful.
Yeah.
And can be funny and interesting. And I think
– you get the work done.
Right. You get the work done. And then you can just play.
Yeah.
And I think, like, it's just like people are so worried about getting laughs right away. And it's like – you can't with long form. You really need to do the work up top.
Well, I bet you, like, you being a stand-up, knowing that you could get laughs right away, like, probably puts you at ease to not get laughs in openings.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when I first started out, I was like, I need laughs right away.
Uh-huh.
And I think I was pretty, I mean, I'll say it, obnoxious in openings. Like, I was a little, like...
You know who you're talking to, Morgan? I'm a fucking monster. You kidding me?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I was, like, obnoxious. I was, like, loud and aggressive, like, especially in pattern game. Like, I was so aggressive.
And even on Lloyd Knight, you think?
On Lloyd Knight, totally. And I had...
And that's funny because you went into the team.
Yeah.
And but you were like, I'm Morgan. Move out my way.
Yeah, 100%. And Shannon was our coach for, like, a year. And she would say, you got to pull it back. This is a team sport. And I was like, you're right. I'm just so worried about laughs. And as soon as that went away, my, like, worry about laughs, I became a much better improviser.
What do you think made it go away?
I think, like, teachers and coaches being like, I think a lot of your stand-up comes out in your improv. This is just different. Try it this way. So I think it was a lot of coaching and just working with a team that made that shift. But that was, like, a huge shift that I made where I was like, oh, this is a team sport. Like, we're building together. We don't – because I was like, the goal is to get laughs. That's mm-hmm. what I thought it was when it coming in.
Yeah.
But now it's like the goal is to build something creative and wonderful with your team, and the laughs will come.
Yeah. It's so funny. It's like – I at least know for improv, like, you – there's nothing worse than a person like wanting the laughs. Then right. people are like, I don't want to give it, you know, right? As right. soon as it's like, whatever, everyone's like, oh, yeah, that's funny.
Right. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like, I don't know, the like major shift for me was like just knowing I was always going to be funny, right? Like, I think you probably have this too, where like, you know, you're going to be funny no matter what. So what's more fun for me now and more important is to, like, really listen and cherish my scene partner.
Yeah.
So I'm just totally engulfed when I get on stage with my scene partner. I'm just like, oh, I love what you're saying. And what I just want to understand your mind, you know?
Yeah.
And that's way more interesting to me now as an improviser.
That's and I also do think that there is, like, that confidence switch
mm-hmm.
that you probably felt like you realized at a certain point. Even because as the first time I saw you, you were like getting big laughs all the time. But I'm sure that like in your head, you don't always think that, like that you're going to get that every show. But
right.
what do you think like made that switch of like I could just chill?
Well, I think like honestly, I think stand up, I was like that's my place to like get laughs and
yeah.
really focus on myself. And I was like – so improv, it's more important for me to focus on other people. And I think also being put on teams with brilliance. I was put on Bloody Mary, which was originally Spooky Ghost.
Oh, okay.
Was my first team. We were 1 month as
a team. Oh, okay. Because I didn't say that. And I was like, I messed up. But
we were 1 month a team.
Okay.
But I feel like I was thrown on a team of, like, insanely talented improvisers.
Yeah.
And I also think, like, Detroit was a phenomenal, but a younger crew. But Smalls was also, like, veteran, heavy hitters.
Yeah.
Like, Casey Jost, you know, George Cameron, like, all these heavy, heavy hitters. Mm-hmm.
People that have been on Harold Knight for a long time.
Yeah, that I respected and thought were so funny.
Yeah, what was it like to, like, jump into that? Did you feel, like...
terrifying, but also... really fun, and they like loved how energetic I was and how crazy I was. And I think it was all about supporting ideas. We just wanted to support. When you respect someone's humor that much, it's much easier to like make the scene about them.
Yeah.
So that's what it was. I just respected all these people so much that I was like, oh, they're going to be really funny. And if I come out with an insane character, they're going to support that.
That's so cool.
And it was so cool. It was. Being on Smalls was one of the most incredible experiences.
You guys are great.
Oh, it was so amazing. And I was such a young, sprightly. And I see, you know, I think I'm not like an old geezer yet, sort of. But I was such a young, sprightly improviser. I was like, oh my God, I want a team with Patrick Noth. And like, what am I doing? But they all loved it and like were so supportive. And I remember rehearsals were just like so silly. And at the end of the day, we were just making each other laugh and cry laughing, which is so fun. So, so fun. So I think that was the switch, was like getting put on teams with pretty veteran players.
And what did it feel like to go from like the Beast stage to Chelsea?
Oh, there's nothing like it. Like Chelsea, you know, is...
Sure.
Oh, gosh. I mean, the Beast, you can't even hear laughs. It's so small. I'm such a big player.
Of course.
I think the first show I went on, I used both doors. For no reason. I just was like, when I come into a scene, I have to slam the door.
I've seen you do that.
Yeah, 100%. So I was just... And I think I've climbed on the... You know, the pipes and all that kind of stuff. So,
of course, especially with George. George was always hanging from those pipes.
Always. Little monkey boy.
That dude loved those pipes.
He did. So I think, and also the atmosphere is just amazing. And I think people were sitting on the stage and that was so cool. And it just felt more like you were connected to the audience. So it was a big move and really exciting. When I got called for Harold, to be on Harold Night 2, I think I cried and was, like, so excited. And it just was, like, everything I'd always really wanted.
Uh-huh.
And so that was really cool. But it's been – I think what's so cool about me is I really want something. And then once I get it, I'm not, like, satisfied. That's, like, most comedians, right?
Sure, yeah. It's like you felt the joy for, like, a second.
Right. And then you're like, okay, what's my next move?
Yeah.
Yeah. So –
And so how do you, like, feed that beast?
I mean, that's why I do stand-up, and I write my own sketch, and I do a lot of my own produced stuff outside of it. I love improv and what it's given me, and it's actually given me a lot of really good writing tools and a lot of acting tools.
Yeah, totally. I think it is a great, like, acting.
So big. It's been my biggest help in acting. And some coaches I've had, like Megan Nurringer, was, like, a major influence on me who I've only had her for probably 4 coaching sessions, but she had such an impact on me because she was like, I think I did a scene where I was like hypersexualized, classic. And I like did it and I like had an orgasm on stage and it was really ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then she was like, actually have a real orgasm, like for like be real about it, like act to your best ability. And I did that and it was 10 times funnier than this over the top silly orgasm. So it was like, oh, like if you really play true to life and characters, that is way funnier. It's going to be more rewarding and cool. So she like had a major impact on my acting and she put me in a spot where I was like, oh, I need to be a really good actor to be a good improviser as well.
That's awesome.
I always like never thought. I was like, improv and acting aren't the same, but now they're like totally enmeshed.
Yeah, I like totally can't agree more. And it's actually like in a way more vulnerable to do it realistically, like an orgasm on stage, than to be big and broad about it.
Totally.
Because you're like, uh-oh, is that what Sebastian looks like?
Right.
You know, right?
And people can tell, right? The audience is like, oh, that's probably what Sebastian looks like coming.
Yeah.
And they're like uncomfortable. And and I think then not the only point is to make them laugh, but make them feel anything.
Yes.
But to feel uncomfortable or like, I don't know, evoking any sort of emotion from an audience, I think, is success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So also you did Torco for a while, right?
I was on Torco for 2 years.
Oh, 2 years. That must have been, I mean, it's amazing to get to like travel and do comedy.
Oh, it's the coolest thing ever. It's to be able to do improv and tour and be paid for it is unbelievable.
Because you're with your friends. It's not like just you're by yourself on the road.
Right. Yeah. Because I tour doing stand up too, which is totally different. But yeah, I mean, it was the best. It was like I was with 3 of my best buds, and I was with a really fun crew. I was with Yoni Lotan, Keaton Patty, and Stefan Schuett.
Yeah,
and
you guys were the crazy team.
The crazy team. we were bananas, and the shows were great. It was an hour and a half long show, so that with 4 people, which forces you to just be thrown into, like, always be on your toes, always be ready for the next initiation. And a lot of trust in your teammates. And we built a really, really great team with a lot of trust and a lot of fun. And we were always fun and light and silly. And I just always trusted what they were going to do on stage. But doing an hour and a half long show, like every weekend, made me such a better improviser. I mean, just the reps and the time.
And you were doing that while you were on Smalls, or was that when you were on Mermaids?
End of Smalls, beginning of Mermaids, I think, yeah.
And you think you brought that energy back to Harold Knight?
Totally, yeah. And it's a lot more freeing. I mean, we don't have to do a Harold.
Yeah.
So we do it off an interview, which is really fun.
Uh-huh.
So I brought that energy, but then brought my focus back to, like, Harold and doing Harolds and things like that.
Did you find it hard to switch back and forth between, like, the two?
Yeah, I think it was hard. It's hard. It's
what was
totally
hard?
Different. It's so different. A Harold is just so specific, and I think I've always been better at a montage or,
of course,
doing it off an interview. So, and also the crowds are so different. I mean, on Harold Knight, it's all students who are like, who understand the art form, and in college, just a bunch of crazy college kids being like, "We love this."
Morgan, you must have destroyed all those shows.
I can't even
imagine. They must have went nuts for you.
Nuts. Nuts. And then you feel like kind of a celebrity after, and everyone's like, you got to come out to the frat houses. And of course, the 4 of us are like, yeah, totally, let's fucking party. And I mean, it was so crazy being on the road as an improviser, because everyone was like, you're so funny. It's like, people would come up to me and be like, you're the next, like, big thing. I know you are. And I would just be like, this is crazy.
And that, even though, like, that feels good.
It feels great.
And in a way, I think hearing that probably made you more confident in yourself.
Totally. It made me so much more confident. And then when I got put on Mermaids, I was sort of one of the more veteran players. And I was, like, ready to be there. I don't know. Everything that's happened to me in comedy seems like I feel ready for it when it comes. And that's really hard to tell new people coming, but it just does take time.
Yeah. So what the, like, be patient, I guess, would be advice that you would give people?
Be patient and work and just do a lot of improv, do a lot of comedy, and see a lot. Like, uh-huh. I saw so much. I went to a ton of stand-up shows. I just was constantly being fed improv and comedy. I just was like, I want to see more. I'm so hungry for it. That's... So, yeah. But there's nothing to replace time, which sucks.
I know.
But it just isn't.
And you were so sad when you didn't get on team. But, probably the time in between, made you stronger.
Totally. Being, I needed to have an audition where I failed like that because mm-hmm. now I fail at auditions all the time. That's just part of it, right?
I mean, if you audition, that's all you do.
That's all you do, right? I just am constantly told absolutely not, So it was good to have that first big failure. I, needed that. And everything up until then, I'd been just, getting, I got into advanced study. I got into this.
Athlete of Colorado. Are you kidding me?
Right. I wasn't good at failing. So I needed that harsh, not good. And my audition was bad. I remember my first audition was bad. I wasn't, listening. I was just, and I think I got to reflect on that and be like, oh, that's not good. So I think it shifted my attitude towards, listening better. Uh-huh. Caring more about the scenes, making them more about the team than just, me shining.
Yeah. So it seems like you, have, really focused on, making sure it's, a team effort.
Totally.
Which is interesting because that's, where you're from is team sports.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it was – and I think, stand-up allows me my outlet of, what mm-hmm. My big ego that I need to, feed.
Yeah.
And I do that with stand-up. But improv to me now is all about – team stuff and making other people shine. And I teach this with the teams I coach, but it's just listen and be excited about each other's ideas. And I am. Mermaids, I'm literally so excited to be in a scene with any of them.
Of course. I mean, they're all so funny.
So excited. And I think they're so funny and interesting that building those ideas together is mm-hmm. the most beautiful thing Mermaids does.
When you coach, what's a philosophy or idea that you're pushing a lot?
I always say when I open with coaching that I teach from a place of love. And I think that you should always have a guttural feeling that you love your scene partner no matter what it is.
Yeah.
Even if it's a transaction scene or something. If you just feel that you love that person, you're going to listen harder. You're going to build ideas and you're going to steer away from arguments, which I think happens a ton in new improv stuff.
Of course, because arguments feel like a good rhythm.
Yeah,
totally. We can stay in an argument forever.
And saying no to someone is funny initially, but then it's hard to withhold that throughout a scene. So I just am just feel like you love that person. And I think if you've been in love before, you don't want to be in an argument with that person. You get in arguments, sure, mm-hmm, but sure. You want to get out of them.
Of course.
And you want to understand why the other person's so upset and mad at you, right?
Yeah, it's an argument with a end goal.
Right.
In arguments and improv scenes, it's usually we're doing an argument, so that's what we can be doing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's so funny that you say that because when I watch you do improv, that's what I feel is your love spewing out.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, why you're so great. And audiences connect with you as soon as you walk on stage is when you are just love is just pouring out of you. And people go to comedy shows to feel happy, I think.
Right. I hope.
Yeah, I hope so. Especially Torco shows and stuff like that. People go there and that's why I think the audiences fall in love with you instantly because you're giving them love too.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's similar with you too. I mean, you have a lot of love on stage and you're really attentive and there and present.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to watch. You're a really joyous person to watch. And you love when your partner or when someone in the scene is making you laugh or making you feel fun, you're having fun too. And I can see that on stage. It's really, this isn't just because we're on this podcast, but you're one of my favorite improvisers to watch. You're very, very funny. Well, they told me to say it.
Shut the fuck up. Morgan, literally, we are very similar
in our
play styles. Yeah. I don't think we've ever done a show together. It might be too much.
I don't think so either.
No, we have. We definitely have.
Have we?
The Will Hines show.
Oh, yeah, where he invited some of his favorite students.
That was the only time we ever performed. But I feel the same about you, Morgan. You literally and I've seen what you talk about, your philosophy of wanting to give more to your team is so clear on stage with you right now.
Right now, for sure.
Yes.
But it wasn't when I started, I think. And it's just been me growing over time. And I think that's also just like a confidence thing. Like once you're confident enough, and that comes with just performing a lot. Like being on a stage a lot, failing, having jokes not hit. It's just that comes with that. I think you feel that way too. You're just super confident up there. And so when I'm confident, it's like, I don't need laughs. I don't need laughter because I know that's coming. But that takes time. I mean, what do you tell a new improviser that?
Yeah.
It's so hard to tell a new...
Well, what can you tell them besides, like, it just takes time? What would you tell them?
Like, it takes time and to, like, be gentle to yourself. I think I was so harsh on myself for not really getting game. I, like, never could grasp it. And then one day I just did. And I heard people say that before, and it was really frustrating to hear.
And like, when did you grasp it?
I think, I mean, it's not, it had probably like a couple years ago.
Isn't it crazy?
It's crazy because it took me, you know, 2 years to really get it. But once it clicked, it clicked. And I think it was not harping on it so hard, right? Like not being like, oh, I need to understand the game in this scene. Mm-hmm. And knowing that it would just like, but now it just comes and I can't, I don't know. It's like something I can't really explain, but I just kind of get it. I get game and it's always going to be there. And I think that's just being an experienced improviser and doing Harold's in 3 hour practices for, you know, I've been doing them for 4 years.
So which is like, incredible. What are you working on now?
As a improviser?
Yeah. No, as a human being, what's good? No, I'm kidding.
Well, I mean, a lot of therapy.
Oh, please. That's awesome. That's good for you. People should do that shit.
It's great for me.
Me too. I go.
Yeah?
Cat's out of the bag.
Oh, there he is. There he is.
Don't tell any of my boys from Staten Island. They'll embarrass the shit out of me. I don't go.
No, he doesn't go, guys. I do. I go to a lot of therapy, which I love.
But what are you working on as an improviser?
I am... I think I like coach a lot, which is fun. But I think as an improviser, I'm always working on making shows like more cohesive. That's what Mermaids is working on right now, is having more cohesive shows where they come together at the end and everything seems to work out and you weave these patterns that come together at the end.
And how are you guys like working on that? If I could take a peek in.
Yeah, sure. We're well.
Who coaches you guys? Sean.
Casey? Right. He was our coach for a long time. Uh-huh. Winston is coaching us.
Oh, now. Awesome.
And we had Nick coaching us for a while. But so I think it's just like being like off the bat, our first like guttural reaction is like theme. So we just like come on stage. They're like, oh, we're going to have a theme. So we just like try and tailor our scenes to more thematic than like individual scenes. Like this is first beat, this is second beat, this is third beat. It's like, no, we're eventually gonna wanna get them to all connect. So we've been working on like putting everything in the same location.
Okay.
Like putting characters in scenes that we've already seen before, things like that.
Oh,
it's cool. It's very cool. Mermaids has been like connecting third beats really well, I think.
Yeah, because you guys have been a team now for like, two years?
Yeah.
So like, it's great. It's like you probably hit a point where you're like, okay, we're getting this Harold's. We're killing it. Let's like try to explore it more.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And so do you go in with a game plan? Like this week we're going to try to do all the same location or is it just based off the suggestion?
It's just based off the suggestion. Yeah. And I think like it's also you can't really do that unless you've been with the team for long enough.
Of course.
And so that's just we've been a team for so long that we trust that we can all get it back to that place. And I think like also knowing and your teammates in a certain way, like some teammates are better at steering the Harold than others.
Yeah.
And trusting that, you know, and I think I do that really well because I'm not the best at like connecting everything, but I am a good listener. And I listen really hard.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of go with the team, you know, and I trust them enough to do it as a team, which we've been really doing really well with.
That's so interesting, like the roles people play on a team.
Totally, right?
And because you don't want a team. That's why me and you are never on the same team.
Probably.
Because we probably play similar roles on teams.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting that like it's about trusting other people.
Yeah.
Did that, like, did you learn that, or was it, did, like, Pulley kind of help you with that, or was it, like, after, like, being on Harold Knight for a while that you figured that out?
Pulley was a big trusting team. Smalls was, like, very much. Detroit was, like, a roller coaster of emotions. I mean, an all-women's team is always going to be challenging in its own respect. But, and I think Lloyd Knight's hard. I mean, you have another goal to be on Harold Knight. So it's, like, really hard. Everyone's trying to shine. And
how'd you, like, try to focus on, like, just teamwork rather than...
Yeah, it was hard. It was really hard. Yeah. And it was really hard to do that because I think everyone was, like, hungry to be on Harold. So I think it was, like, a big testament to our coach. Like, Shannon was our coach for, like, a year, and she was, like, harping on not being a standout and more just, like, meshing together as a team. So I think it's, like, a lot of the coach had a lot to do with that because – I think at moments it was like everyone was just kind of feeding their own fire and we really needed to build something together. Once I got on Harold, I think it was just like I was such a newbie and so excited that I was like, oh, I just have to put trust in everyone else.
Yeah, it's like playing with people that are more experienced than you allows you to kind of be like, okay, show me, you know?
Totally.
Which it's like you rise to the occasion when you're in those sorts of situations.
Yeah.
That's...
Totally.
That's so
and
cool.
How is it with you not doing Harold's anymore? You don't do Harold's anymore, really.
No, I don't do Harold's anymore.
Do you miss it?
Yeah. You know what? I coach a lot of people that do Harold's,
right.
You know, especially with, like, audition prep coming up. So I feel like while I watch scenes, I, like, am working my second beat muscle a little bit because I get worried that I'm going to, like, lose that.
Right.
Yeah, because that's, like, one thing I do envy is, like, having like being forced to do a second beat.
Right, the structure.
Yeah, because, like, it's easy to do. Of course, we'll do a callback on the weekends for a scene that killed.
Right.
But, like, a scene that didn't go so well, there's, like, an art form to, like, being like, hey, I'm going to attack this. I'm going to, like, pick one thing from this and attack it.
Right.
What do you do if, like, your first beat's, like, bad, which happens?
Right. I think it's, like, it's what you said. Like, it's the being forced to have to make that second beat funnier is a really, like, hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, after doing so many, I've done so many bad first beats that I think, like, knowing that you don't have to repeat it and you can, like, take what was good from it and create a second beat that maybe is not the same game is, like, important to just know you're going to be funny in your second beat. And, like, knowing that it's, like, not a blank slate, but it's not – you're not, like, forced to really replicate what had just happened, like, the mess that just happened. You can pull what was particularly good.
So you always, like, rather follow what worked or the fun.
Yeah, I follow the fun a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that, like, perfectly lends itself to Turco.
Yeah, totally. Oh, Turco was totally, like, following what was fun. Uh-huh. It was, like, a more, like, slacker form. It was like, oh, something really funny's happening.
Uh-huh.
We'll follow that hardcore.
Do you miss doing Turco now?
I do miss Turco, yeah.
Do you miss the show? Like, what do you miss about, like, doing those shows?
Just, like, how long they were.
Yeah.
Because it's such a different thing when you have an hour and a half to, like, go through the lows with the audience and the highs and trying to build it all together at the end. I miss that a lot. I miss my teammates. Like, I don't perform with those guys anymore, and I miss them a lot. They're really talented and awesome. So I miss that. I miss, like, traveling with those guys.
Yeah.
It's just, like, was such a fun time. But it definitely took a toll on me. I was, like, exhausted by the end.
Of course.
I was just like, this is a lot to do every week. By the end, we were like, we can't go out after shows. We just want to play Nintendo and hang out. It definitely aged all of us, but in a good way. It was, like, good. We got our
You want those memories.
Out. Yeah, it was so fun.
So going in the future, what are you, like, focusing on? What are you going to be, like, focus on coaching or focusing on, like, improv-wise?
Yeah, I think I'm like, focused on Harold and being with Mermaids. I think shakeups are happening soon, so that's – everyone's kind of like, oh, what's going to happen? And you have no idea what's going to happen. So I'm just, like, focusing on
having fun.
What does
a team do when that's, like, they know shakeups are, like, right around the corner?
I think Mermaids thinks, in a way, we could be stay together. But I think it also when you know that shakeups are happening, you're like, okay, so what's fun to us and what do we want to, like, have? If Mermaids is going to end in 2 months, what do we want as our last 2 months? And I think it's just having fun doing cohesive shows and enjoying one another's company, because it might not be around forever.
Of course.
I think that's what we're doing right now.
Honestly, I see some of the best work on Harold Knight when shakeups are right around the corner.
Right.
It's insane. It's kind of the stakes are dropped a little bit of these shows.
Right.
It's like, okay, we might not be a team. These might be my last few shows. So let's do it for us and have a good time.
Totally.
And that's what you guys are kind of doing.
Totally. Yeah. That's what we're doing. Big time. It's cool. Really fun. I couldn't say enough good things about Mermaids. It's just been a really fun ride for us. But I think that's when we're going fun, having fun and being joyous on stage. I'm always working on trying not to break. That's my big thing. I am a big breaker.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working on that with improv, but also really letting that be my fun outlet.
How do you try to work on that? Because I'm a big breaker too.
Oh, it's so hard, right? I think,
yeah.
Turning my focus in practices to doing that, because in practice I'm really loose and totally the loosest. We're the same, so I don't know. It's crazy. But I think working on stronger commitment. I'm also been auditioning a lot for film and television, so my acting has been a big focus of mine. So
yeah.
I think that helps too.
Sure, and you can't be breaking as you're
right
doing acting stuff.
Right, exactly.
Well, that's really cool. Love that so much.
What are you working on with improv?
Me?
Yeah.
I said trying to do what I preach.
Right, yeah.
Isn't that so funny? But it's interesting because what I usually preach is the opposite of what comes natural to me, which
totally.
Is the joy and fun. I'm preaching oh, we got to be grounded. We have to have realistic moments. We need to be playing base reality because that's the only way that unusual things pop. I guess that's what I'm working on. And especially when you're on the weekend, you could kind of get you get looser and fun. You're having more silliness in a way.
Yeah.
It's so hard, that balance though, with breaking, because your joy is just coming out of you all completely when you're on stage.
Yeah.
In a way that doesn't translate to other things, but when you're doing improv, it's just your eyes are they're different.
Yeah.
Morgan, they're you look you're different. You're in a zone or in a moment.
Yeah.
So I think that's why the audience is so forgiving of you breaking. And
yeah.
I think it's great that you're working on it, but nobody is having a bad time when they're watching you have fun in those scenes.
Well, I'd say the same with you. I mean, I just think this is a fun conversation for us to have because we're very similar.
I
definitely, when I coach the opposite of how I play.
Yeah.
So it's hard because they're well, you don't play like that. And it's well, yeah, but I'm trying to.
Yeah, know? That's what I work on. You can't teach how to be Morgan on stage.
Right.
Right?
Right. How am I supposed to? I don't even know sometimes. My brain's such a kooky nut.
Yeah. How are you going to teach? Oh, play a big, ridiculous character that could be sustainable for 10 minutes just right. saying ridiculous things. You can't teach that.
Right. You can't teach that.
But you can teach what you're working on.
Yeah. I think that's what I've been doing too. So it's I feel the same way you do, which is so cool.
Yeah. Awesome. And so is there any last minute pieces of advice that you want to give to any people out there? Any things about improv that you kind of want to say?
Oh boy, big broad question to end this puppy, huh, Seb?
Well, I'm getting weaker as this podcast is going along, you know. Actually, that's what they told me to ask. That's what it says on the paper. It says at the end, ask a big broad question.
Big broad question. I think I've said, I think I,
uh-huh.
my big philosophy is teaching from a place of love and support and also just the biggest thing of and I know this is really hard to hear and it was hard to hear when I was growing up, but time, mm-hmm. give yourself time to grow as an improviser.
Yeah.
And I'm still growing, I'm still learning a lot. I learn a lot from my teammates. I learn a lot from my coaches. I respect my coaches a lot.
Yeah.
No matter if I've been doing improv the same amount of time as them, I really respect my coaches and what they have to say. So respect people and your peers. And I learn a lot from my students,
Yeah.
And that's such a cool thing. Just be open to always learning. That's what improv's about. It's about learning. And so is comedy. And confidence will come as you learn about yourself, and if you are thinking about coming out, you should come out.
Awesome.
If you feel safe about it,
Yeah. And that's beautiful that you do and that you're able to be that for people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's more people than you know that look up to you for being not only a brilliant comedian, but for being open and honest about that stuff, Morgan.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's like you affect people and you don't even realize in like a fun, silly way, but then in like a beautiful way that like makes them feel safe.
Oh, you're so sweet. Did they tell you to say that also?
Yeah, it said after the big broad question, say something nice about her being open about her sexuality.
So specific on these
sheets. Yeah, these sheets are specific. Yeah. Awesome. So Morgan is literally one of the funniest people at the theater. She literally is the most fun to watch. So you got to go watch her. Tuesday night, Harold Knight, Mermaids. Cool. Yeah. You got to go check out her stand-up, you know, watch her videos online. MorganMiller.com. That shit exists.
MorganMillerComedy.com?
Comedy. MorganMillerComedy.com.
There's a Morgan Miller photographer. I'll tell you what. I'm not happy about it.
Oh, that's what I looked at, and I thought it was hilarious. So check out MorganMillerPhotography.com. That shit's awesome. And that was a long-form conversation. Tune in next episode when Morgan Miller will be your host. All right, guys. I'll catch you later.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.